When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, welcome to FitzDog Radio. I'm just back from Alaska, one of the non-contingent U.S. states. Although, is it? Can you drive to Alaska from? Oh, no, I guess Canada. I think it goes Washington State, and then you got a little piece of Canada, and then we went, hey, Canada, fuck off. We're going to grab this little chunk with the oils. I'm not going to lie to you. I was so excited to go to Alaska. It's so mysterious. It's so, everything's big. It's epic. And I was bored out of my mind. I got stuck at a hotel. I was in the hotel room for 4 days and I didn't see anything. I took one walk, you know, it's just, I should have rented a car and I didn't. And then I had a ton of work to do, like podcasts. Anyway, I didn't see shit, but it is what I did see is beautiful. I guess landing on the plane was nice. I went to Alaska before and I had way more adventures. The shows were amazing. Loved the crowds, which is so weird because the people in Alaska in the wild, when you see them in a store or they're the front desk people, they are so boring and without any humor whatsoever. And then you do a show and they were amazing. They were so great. I would even think about taping a special there. They had this theater that we did, this beautiful, like 400 seat theater. And the people were, they got it. There's a real mentality in Alaska of like, nobody tells us what to do. So they're not offended by anything. I had two walkouts on some Christian jokes I was doing, but that's about right. Yeah, if you don't get any walkouts, you're not doing your job. But I got stir crazy. I was just, it was a suite, but it wasn't a great hotel. I think I would have rather had a smaller room in a nicer hotel, but I don't know that there is a nicer hotel in Fairbanks that might have been as good as it gets. I don't know. But I was pacing back and forth. I would go to the gym, but the gym was literally dumbbells. The heaviest dumbbell was 20 pounds. I'm not a monster, but I need more than 20 pounds. And they had like two bicycles, and that was it. That was the gym. So that sucked. But again, the shows were great. I also felt a sense of freedom when I did the shows because I really was like, I was doing my new hour. I've got a new hour since I did my special. And it's not 100%, but it's about 90%. And I was working it out. And my first thought was, if this doesn't go well, who's ever going to know? This is total freedom. This is like, you know, playing with a net. What's the expression? Something with a net? Anyway, that's what it was. But it didn't matter because they made the special better. I grew as a comic. But it is weird. Like, winter's there. It's already winter. It was in the 30s. And I could see the look in their eyes. Like, they were starting to look a little distant. Like, the winter's coming. They were shutting down. There's pot shops on every corner, liquor stores. I get why you go to Alaska. I don't understand why you stay. Why would you live where it's below zero 8 months of the year? Fuck that. These are rugged, tough people. Like, they really, and everybody does their own shit. Like, the guy, there was two guys that booked me that were great dudes. And they took care of me. I did go to dinner at one of their houses. We had some nice salmon. But, you know, that day he had chopped wood and his wife was, she had a power saw out. She damaged her hand. Like they do it. They do their own shit. Like they dug drainage in their yard. And I don't know. I don't want to do any of that. I want to hire people to do that stuff. So anyway, I'm back. I did a show with Harlan Williams last week. Holy shit, we did a clip that blew up. It's got like 4 million views, which was a lot of fun. It was about me counting to 10 in Spanish. And then my other clips are doing good. I'm new to this social media thing. I've always posted, but usually just like announcing what shows are coming up or clips from my podcast. But I've been doing some of my stand-up clips from my special and some of these interviews I've been doing. And it's good. I'm getting good traction, which feels nice. I got to keep it going. I had shoulder surgery on this shoulder, my left shoulder today. I can lift it for the first time in 8 years because they put painkillers in it. You know, it's steroids and painkillers. And now I got to get a physical therapy and whatever. It was good. Finally got it done. I got Jay Moore on today, so I'm going to keep it short. We had a really good talk. He's an old dear friend, a brother in this world of stand-up comedy. I got dates coming up on the road. Tulsa, Oklahoma. Bricktown, October 10th through the 12th. Kansas City at the Funny Bone, October 18 and 19. Then I'm coming to Philly, Tacoma, Tempe, San Francisco, Cleveland, Atlanta, Janesville, Wisconsin, Nyack, Raleigh, Milwaukee. It's all at fitzdog.com. Get some tickets. Come out and see some live comedy. It doesn't get any better than that. It's the best night you can spend out. It's all people say to me on the way out of a show. I haven't laughed this hard in so long. This feels so good. I needed this. So come out, have a few laughs. Also, support for FitzDog Radio comes from MyBookie. I signed up for an account, and I'll tell you something. It has got me so much more. I'm not going to lie to you. I am really a football fan. I don't watch basketball. If you do, you can watch a ton of different sports. You can bet on a bunch of different sports with MyBookie. I use it for football. And I ended up buying like the full package this year so I can watch all the games, which would have been a waste of money normally. But now that I'm like putting money on the games and I can click back and forth between any game and I can see my parlays, like I played a parlay. If you don't know parlay, you basically bet like multiple games at once and then the earnings are astronomical. So I hit a parlay this weekend, baby. It was nice. I had, who did I have? San Francisco, Kansas City, and I think Houston. And so that was, I didn't bet a lot, unfortunately. I should have put a lot down. And then I lost some of it back. I bet the Jets. Why do I break my rule? Never bet for or against the Jets and the Giants. They break your heart every time. So anyway, they have these risk-free bets. Thousands in cash prizes. And again, the fun thing is you can bet from your phone. You can be waiting online at CVS. You can be at your job. Maybe you got one of those jobs where you got a little downtime. And there's these weekly no sweat win-win bets all season. Sign up now at mybookie.ag. Use my promo code FITZ, that's FITZ, to cash in on a double deposit bonus. You can literally double the cash in your account before you even place your first bet. But don't wait on it. It's only going to be available for a limited time. Turn the football knowledge you got into some big-time payouts with MyBookie. They've got this loyalty rewards program, MyBookie Plus. The more you play, the more you earn, and you go through different like tiers, and there's exclusive promotions and giveaways. And so there's a lot of ways to do it. Bet on underdogs, upsets, bet on backdoor covers, overs and unders. Make your football season a winning season with MyBookie. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere. Okay. My guest today, the lovely and talented Jay Moore, he was in a TV show called Action that was really great. It was coming after him doing Jerry Maguire, so he was that kind of a character. He was on the series The Ghost Whisperer. He was on Gary Unmarried. That lasted a few years. I think that was on like CBS. He was actually on Saturday Night Live for a few years. He was great on that. Suicide Kings, Pauly, The Adventures of Pluto Nash, Are We There Yet? Street Kings, on and on. Tons of credits. And he had a podcast called SM Oddcast. I don't know what that's, Smodcast, whatever that is. I don't think he does that anymore. And he was nominated for an Emmy for the host and executive producer of Last Comic Standing. Anyway, here he is. He's a very complex guy. He's very intelligent. He's got an incredible memory. He's got like a freakish ability to do impressions. And he's ballsy as hell. He's a real true voice. I love him. Here he is, Jay Mohr. Jay Mohr is my guest. He's just pulled out a couple of, what are those, nicotine patches?
Yeah, just in case.
So you're jacked on testosterone. You're taking testosterone.
I wouldn't say I'm jacked on it. I was prescribed it because I had none.
I don't have any either.
Doctor thought I was an old Asian woman.
Oh. Did it affect how you looked or how you felt?
I was obese. I was pre-diabetic.
Oh, yeah, you were. I forgot about that.
I had a fatty liver. Oh, yeah, you saw me at that event.
I saw you when you were fat.
When I wheezed up to the mic.
Yeah. I think Chris Spencer called you Jay Waymore.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Or something like that. Yeah.
Waymore? Or just Waymore is good. My guess is Waymore. Yeah, so my testosterone didn't register, so yeah. I got prescribed testosterone.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'm jacked on it.
Well, you seem like you're in great shape.
A lot of work.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I was, Greggy. So I was coaching wrestling on speed.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so I would wake up, paddle to the Malibu Pier and back. That's 6 miles. Then I would go to wrestling practice. Then I would stay up all night. Then I would paddle to the mountain. So, I mean, you burn a lot of calories
when
you don't sleep. So I was like this rail, wiry speed guy.
This is once you got on the testosterone?
No, this is when I was using 3.5 years ago.
Oh,
and then
okay.
You stop using everything.
Yeah.
And then you just sit in meetings all day where they serve cake.
Yeah.
So it's like if you, like the old equalizers on stereos, you just max it all out all day, every day, and then you hit it to zero and your body just kind of freaks out.
When you say speed, do you mean like Ritalin?
Adderall, all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I'm a pill guy. I love pills.
See, that's interesting because I've taken Ritalin for 20 years.
I never took Ritalin. Adderall. I just wanted to fit in.
But I've taken Adderall, but like I never felt the need. It's weird to me, that particular drug, because opiates, I get it. I've been hooked on opiates.
Oh.
I was an alcoholic. I quit drinking. I'm not sober. I still once in a while smoke weed or take some mushrooms, but I haven't had a drink in 34 years. But Adderall and Ritalin, I take it. I take 15, 20 milligrams and I'm up. And I can't see taking more. Like I can't see, what's the benefit when you take more than that?
There's no benefit. You don't have the physical allergy that I have then.
Yeah.
Then maybe you label yourself an alcoholic, but maybe you're not an alcoholic because my allergy is the second it touches my body, I'm like, I need more immediately.
Okay.
Like whether it's booze, NyQuil, cough medicine with codeine, weed, pills, Vicodin, Norco, OxyContin, no matter what it is.
So it's a buffet for you. It's just getting something in your body.
And the minute I have it, it's all I think about is how do I get more of this?
And the
mental obsession I have is I keep thinking this will be the substance I can use like a gentleman.
Right.
And then no matter what the substance,
you abuse it.
It goes into this sinkhole where I just pull everybody
down.
Were
you
with
like
me.
That with women at any point in your life?
I'm like that with men, with people, just affection, validation.
Yeah. Right.
More.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when you were, I think about you, when you and I were coming up in New York, and I want to talk about this a bit, in a minute.
But we were, you know, in the Boston Comedy Club, Comedy Cellar, Comic Strip, Stand Up New York, banging out sets every night. And you were you were not hard on the eyes. You know, you had this blonde, wavy hair, and you were kind of ripped, and you were doing tons of college shows. And, like, I remember, like, because I used to do college shows, too, but you were on the cover. I would try to get it to NACA conventions. You were on the cover of NACA magazine.
National Association of Campus Activities.
Yeah, yeah. They book all the colleges.
I was in my boxer shorts on the beach.
And you were jumping. You were midair. And I was like, who the fuck is, you know, I'm used to being in a smoky club in the Village. We're all dressed in black. Yeah. This motherfucker is in a bathing suit jumping through the air on the beach.
Not even a bathing suit, boxers.
Yeah, whatever. But you were. I mean, what was it like doing those colleges? Did you ever hook up with the girls when you did the colleges?
I'm going to go on record as saying, for me, yeah, it's a lot harder to hook up on the road than people think.
Yes, that's true.
It's almost impossible. It's like a Herculean task because you say goodnight and go that way. They get up with a date and go that
way. Yeah.
So if you want to hook up with somebody, you have to pardon me, excuse me, through your own crowd, yeah, sign this, shake that, take this picture, mm-hmm, and then approach that person and go, hey, you were just sitting there for an hour. I just thought maybe it's really, you got to be, you almost have to be like a psychopath.
Well,
to
the guys that do it have after parties.
I think you also have to have have some psychopathy to you where you have to truly be a psychopath.
Yes.
To not care about, get the fuck away from me, asshole.
Yeah.
And I'm too consumed with the validation aspect. Like, if you reject me,
you're afraid of rejection.
I don't know how to act if you don't, like, yeah, I don't know who I am.
Yeah.
So I find out what you like and I fill that container.
Right.
Like, oh, but that's how I became knowledgeable.
Is that codependent?
No, it's just insecurity, I think. Like,
right,
I'm gonna do whatever. I think it just comes from being a child of like an alcoholic and being the youngest kid on your neighborhood by 4 years, youngest kid in your family by 6 years, youngest person on the wrestling team, youngest person in the stand-up comedy world, youngest person on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
The first movie being Jerry Maguire. It's like you're always imposter syndrome constantly.
Yeah.
So if there's a conversation and they're talking about jazz, I'm gonna go become a savant with jazz and then I'm gonna come back to this conversation.
Okay.
Just to fit in with this group.
I see.
That's why I know anything about like presidential history, jazz, art. Like it's all because
black culture. Because black, in New York,
that's just from hanging out with our guys.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like you, I remember that you became very comfortable hanging out with the black comics in New York, and I remember thinking that's weird because I don't see you as coming from that world.
No,
but you learned it.
I just think show business kind of trumps any racial or social.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah, like when people go like, you're kind of racist, it's like, I'm in fucking show business.
Yeah,
like,
right,
racist,
right, right.
Homophobic.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
You got the wrong guy.
Yeah.
Sexist, sure.
I mean, of all the places they try to integrate, stand-up comedy was never a problem, you know? I mean,
you don't
have to
try to integrate. It's already
it's just
integrated.
There. You're backstage. You're in the green room. You're at the table upstairs at the cellar, and it's Patrice, and it's Keith Robinson, and it's Chappelle, and everybody's just hanging, and you're busting on each other for race. Tough Crowd with Colin Quinn was like a social experiment.
All right, you know, let's not go down memory lane too hard. You know, Fitzsimmons, the only guy I know who. How good did we have it? If you look at like that like Outliers book, like, well, you have to be a marathon runner, it helps to be Kenyan and come from a long line of people,
right,
that ran 20 miles to run down a gazelle going back thousands of years, or to be
a computer programmer to grow up in Silicon Valley,
right,
in the 80s.
We were in New York, and I mean Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, on a stoop for hours. Me, you, Rich Voss, Keith Robinson, Jim Norton, Dave Attell, Colin Quinn, Patrice O'Neill, Dave Chappelle, Neil Brennan,
Jeff Ross, Jim Gaffigan,
like
Greg Giraldo.
Any combination of six of those names was every single, not like once a month, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, every single night,
yeah,
from the moment I woke up, I couldn't wait to walk across Washington Square Park and just go, hey,
yeah, right,
look at this guy.
Right, and sit in the back of the room and watch people bomb, you know, because the Boston Comedy Club It was brutal. There was rough nights there. You had Asian NYU students mixed in with some bridge and tunnel Italian guys. Like, it was all over the place.
Well, you got let in for free.
You got barked from the street.
You would just be walking by, and Jason Steinberg would be like, "Nah, man, it's free. Come on. You guys need drink tickets?" And I love my two favorite heckles were Dane Cook on stage, and a guy just came in. Jason pulled him off the street, and he had grocery bags. And Dane goes, "You seem really pissed off. Are you okay?" And he goes, "I got ice cream in here. You better be funny." And then Todd Barry going head to head with this Puerto Rican guy. And he like really went in on the Puerto Rican guy. And the Puerto Rican guy like had his feelings hurt.
Yeah.
And his out was, "Okay, Planet Head." He called Todd Barry Planet Head. But like with his tail between his legs leaving. "Okay, Planet Head."
That's hilarious.
Tony Woods and sleeping in the back.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
"Hey, Shorty.
Oh, shit.
Am I on?" "Okay. I guess we're doing comedy, man." Tony Woods, we had to tell him the show started at 6 p.m.
Yeah.
For an 8 p.m.
Yeah.
show. And he would still be like,
"Guy likes to smoke weed."
Yeah.
And one of those guys, we were talking earlier about somebody else, but Tony's one of those guys. Everybody goes, "Why was that guy not a star?"
Yeah.
Good looking, smooth, funny material.
You got to be on time to your own.
Yeah, that helps a lot.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just, that's one of the few guys you can actually say, "This is why, probably."
Yeah, probably. But isn't that amazing?
Like, Attell is everybody's favorite. I put Attell on the other day. My wife was feeding the dogs, and I just put on Skanks for the Memories. And my wife's like, "Woo-hoo-hoo!"
Yeah.
Like, just a dog whistle to a random white lady.
I mean, that guy, he continues to get good, but at that age, he was just, he changed comedy. How many people do you know that have a tell inflection in their voices? Like famous comics today.
"All right.
Yeah.
Don't take us there.
Yeah.
A boogly.
A boogly.
Merlin, teach us your ways. Take him to a game.
Jebediah.
Oh, give it to me, you Abe Lincoln looking. Whisker burn where it counts.
Bound and gagged in the back of my trunk.
Watching the sun come up through the windshield.
Could you be more Asian?"
I like him at the cellar. These Mexican girls were in the front row. He's just fucking bombing. And he goes, "What is it, ladies? Did Selena die again?" Like, I don't. But do you find this when you're on stage? Like, I've been tripping on this lately. You'll ad lib something. It's the most perfect thing. It's genius.
Yeah.
You didn't think, there was no thought.
Mm-hmm.
It just.
Yeah.
Like, there was never. Do you get that?
Yeah, I really do think, and you hear musicians talk about it all the time, about, "I didn't write that song, it came to me." Like, you know, whether or not you want to attribute it to God or, you know, some people just believe in music as sort of this transcendental thing that maybe it's like in the unconscious and you just kind of draw from it or it comes to you. And there's no doubt that stand-up comedy is like that. Like when people say, "How do you write?" I always go, "I don't know. I've been doing this for 35 years. I don't know how I write."
Yeah.
You know, like I got a notepad and I jot down a thought when I get it, but then I got to bring it on stage. The only way I'm going to write that bit is when there's an audience in front of me and the juices are flowing and I'm in the zone and my confidence is 8 times higher than it is for the rest of the day. That's when I'm my true self. And then I insert that bit into my head, and I have ADHD. I don't write, but ADHD means I can hyper-focus in the moment when there's pressure. And that's when it all happens.
You know, you also have ODD. You're a little odd, yeah.
That's good.
But there is some, like, it's almost like there's a veil between, I sound like fucking Russell Brand. There's a veil between consciousness when I'm on stage. But how many times do you walk off stage after killing?
Yeah.
No idea what you said.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And then a friend will go, I like that bit you did about ghost riding your bikes as kids. And you're like,
yeah.
Oh, that was like 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I tape every set.
I can't listen to myself.
Yeah.
I mean, I can, but I'm like, I get, You know what? I just don't, we were talking about it off mic. I just don't.
Yeah.
I've invested the least in me of anything I've ever invested in my life.
Yeah. Now you mean?
No, that, now it's, I mean, I just, being sober, like it's, I had to just.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of all I do.
Right.
But like Barry Katz used to be like, why don't you invest in yourself, man? Like, I don't know. I don't like sit down. Like, I don't have like a structured writing time.
Or, yeah.
I index cards all over my house with like words on them.
Uh-huh.
Like, if by the way, if I was ever murdered and the detectives went through my house, it would just be like, gay ghost. Anal.
Right.
Proposing during anal.
Sex with a rhino?
Rhino sex. Zebra balls. This guy was into some freaky shit, Sergeant. This fucking gay ghost is written everywhere. This is like some occult shit or something here. I don't know.
A month later, that same detective's on stage at the Comedy Cellar doing the material.
Boo! Be scared.
He cracks the code on all those bits you've been struggling with.
Good luck. Do you find like you do the bit, it kills. The second time you do it, it's like 30% what it was.
Yeah.
And then there's a 6-week process of getting it back. What do you think that is?
Well, because you're not in the moment. I mean, if you're in the moment, then each word that's coming out of your mouth is connected to you. And then when you try to regurgitate it, when you try to repeat it, you're an actor now playing that script. You know what I mean? You're trying to conjure up what it was.
I think doubt comes in too.
Yeah.
When I'm self-conscious of it. Because I'll have bits like, I'm like, eh. And then I'll have friends that go, I hope you do that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, really?
Right.
And then it gets good again.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, I have bits that I have worked on. I have this bit about God, how I believe in God, and millennials don't believe in God. They believe in computers. And then I have this analogy about God is the cloud, like you believe in the cloud. I've been working on that bit 2 years, and 90% of the time it gets almost nothing. But I know there's a great fucking
it's a great
bit
idea.
In there. And I just keep playing with it, switch the order, change the words. I mean, I did it one night and Sebastian came up and he's like, dude, it bombed. And he goes, that bit
he's
is...
never spoken that fast in his life.
How did he say it to me?
That bit about the cloud.
How different is your Dice impression from your Sebastian impression?
Well, Dice is up here.
Oh.
Andrew Dice Gay. So I start sucking his dick. It was fucking beautiful. Yeah. I like the story. Dice is on, everyone's on at the Comedy Store, and there's a mother and daughter in the front row, and they're fucking ridiculously hot, and they're they're out.
They're both hot, the mother and the daughter.
The daughter is just a fucking, like, Lawrence Taylor. She's just a killer. And every
Lawrence Taylor?
Just, like, something, just significant.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's a weird reference.
So every comic's like, that's your daughter?
Yeah.
Wow. And then Dice goes up like last and goes, that's your daughter? Every comic comes up here, they want to fuck her? Yeah. Where the fuck? Not me. I like mommy. I like mommy. You're the only guy that would laugh like that. Everybody else is like, yeah.
Because I've been there. I've seen mothers
Not
and daughters.
Me.
Well, how old's your daughter?
I don't have a daughter. I have two sons.
Oh, you have two sons. I think you have a daughter. My daughter.
Sons right here. Yeah.
Yeah. Why don't you
21
just take
and
the script?
13. No, that'll alarm me.
My daughter's 21, and maybe she should meet your son. You think, is he available?
No.
Oh, he's got a girlfriend?
Yeah, he's at Oregon.
Oh, he's at Oregon?
Yeah.
Go Ducks.
Dean's listing everything.
Get out of here.
Oh, and shit, I don't even understand, like molecular or something or other.
Really?
A lot of microscopes and
theorems. That's going to lead to an actual job. There's a lot of majors out there that you go like, hey, guess what, pal? AI just took your whole workforce.
It's either a job or a bunker.
Yeah.
There's no middle ground. Right. There's no like, I'm getting by.
Yeah.
Studied molecular biology for 8 years.
Yeah.
It's either you're either in the woods with a series of shovels.
Yeah.
Or you got a great job. Yeah. And I got my 13-year-old who's, he's now playing, is this the most West LA shit ever? He plays flag football for his school.
Uh-huh.
But my nanny goes, I go, where's Mackie? He's at flag football. She just has no idea that she's saying it wrong. Mackie's at flag football.
Isn't that the best when you hold your tongue?
Yeah.
You just go like, oh no, I need to hear that.
But then
a lot
I get
more.
To practice. Whoa.
Yeah.
Those guys. No. A fag football. He's a fag football.
He grabbed the handkerchief from the other man.
He grabbed it. He pulled the other man. How come I said he? I don't even know how to speak Spanish.
That's what fag football would be. He's like, you grab the guy's dick to get him down.
Everybody wants to get tackled.
I have so many things I want to ask.
Let's do it.
Can you tell me, you got married twice. You've been married twice.
Three times. Yeah, once Jeannie is my third.
Okay, the first one was that actress, right?
Nicole, Nikki, Jeannie.
Oh, Nicole. I didn't know Nicole. Mm-hmm. Who was she? She an actress?
My son's mom.
Oh.
Not to be spoken of on a public forum.
Oh, very good.
Out of respect, yeah.
Yeah. So when you got married, I don't know which marriage this was, but Buddy Hackett came to the wedding. Can you tell a story about that?
Oh, Buddy was like a father to me. I don't really
Weren't you on a TV show with him?
Action, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I met Buddy. I auditioned for the and got the role of the voice of the bird in Paulie.
Yeah.
And they sent me a picture of this bird, and I'm like, what do I know? It's DreamWorks.
Yeah.
So they're like, but it's DreamWorks. It's a big deal. I'm like, all right. Then they sent me a video. I was like, I'm not going to go in. Then I got a VHS video of a blue-crowned conure sitting on a perch, which was 4 hours long, of just a bird.
Uh-huh. Squawking or just sitting?
Just sitting.
Yeah.
They just had, like, surveillance footage of a bird.
Yeah.
And then Sunday, I get a call. It was a Sunday. I get a call from my agent, like, this whole movie's going to go away if you don't go in. Like, some bull, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, I'll go in. But I'm like, what voice do you do? Do I do my own voice? Like, who wants to hear that? And I'm like, don't do something hard because you're going to have to remember which. And I started doing like a New York accent. I got the picture of the bird taped to my steering wheel to just make me nuts.
Yeah.
And I start doing Ed Norton from The Honeymooners.
Uh-huh.
Hey there, but the bird's a little cuter. So I started going a little higher. Hey there, and I realized I'm doing Buddy Hackett.
Oh.
So I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to do a Buddy Hackett impression for this bird.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I'm like flying, running red. I can't wait. I put this thing off for 2 months. Yeah. Now I'm like, woo, I got a job.
Yeah.
I get in there. I'm like, I wish I could fly. I get in there like, you want the sides? I'm like, nope. You want something to drink? Nope. They're like, okay, we're ready for you. Buddy Hackett walks out of the room.
No way.
How?
Get the fuck out of here.
How does that? That only happens to guys like us.
That's crazy.
How are you, pal?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I either just do it and act like a psychopath, right? And so I did it.
Yeah.
I get the part. He gets hired to be a
You got the part?
Doing him. Right.
So it's like that classic thing of like, who's Jay Moore? Get me Jay Moore. Get me a Jay Moore
type.
And then who's Jay Moore?
Yeah.
So you became the
I
new
did a Buddy
Hackett.
Hackett impression. That was my plan. He walks out of the room. I go in and just stick to it anyway. I get the part, but I also get a speaking part as a grifter. So I'm in a pawn shop. Buddy Hackett is the pawn shop owner. The bird's in the corner. If you close your eyes, you don't know who's talking.
Yeah.
Between the three of us. And then one point during between setups, Buddy Hackett goes, I'll never understand how you got a part doing me. And I go, I think they just wanted a younger sounding you. He goes, fair enough. You know what the fly said when he walked over the mirror? That's one way of looking at it. It's a constant barrage. So yeah, I don't really remember him at the wedding so much. Like nothing significant. He was just...
Wasn't there a story?
Oh, it was Barry Katz's wedding.
Barry Katz's wedding.
He threw the wine on
Tell the story.
You know when you like unplug or you stop playing equipment, but you still have that like that barely audible hum from like shitty speakers?
Yeah.
So apparently that was happening. And then Buddy's like, you got to get rid of the hum. You got to get rid of the hum before my toast. I can't, but giving me a headache. And he throws water on the like Casio keyboard and ruins it.
So the band can't play for the rest of the time without a keyboard.
Kind of thank God, right? I like live music that's like live music.
Yes.
My new absolute nothing's above this pet peeve. I go to a restaurant to get a nice quesadilla and chips, and there's a fucking guy in the corner playing Guns N' Roses on an acoustic guitar.
Okay.
She's got a smile. And it's like, you know what would be better? If you were not doing that.
Yep.
Like if you vanished, this was my dining experience.
Yep.
With like the tide coming up.
Yep. The exception.
More than words. Like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
Why is this a good idea ever? Yeah. You could just play the song.
Right. And he's doing it with the confidence, totally unwarranted confidence.
Yeah, when when they bang the guitar little drum fill.
Right.
More than
the volume's at 11.
Bro, you are the fucking worst. Yeah. Even when they're great.
Yeah.
Ugh.
The one exception, Vegas lounges.
Cookie jar. He didn't have a guitar. He just pressed a button.
But he built it. He layered it. First, he played a little riff on the piano. He put it on a loop. And then he recorded a little riff on the guitar, and he put that on a loop. And then he did
the original
drum
Reggie
track.
Watts.
He was.
Yeah.
He really was. And people don't know this. He had a big hairpiece, kind of like, it was like Elvis meets
Governor, or like a mayor from Rhode Island.
Yeah, exactly. It was like Italian Elvis.
Yeah, it was like Jeremy Renner and fucking with the big, I don't know the name of the movie. That was a terrible reference. Rich Voss and me are at Cookie Jar at the Continental in Vegas.
Yeah.
Rich Voss says to me, give me $100. I just lost my money at Cramps. I'm like, all right. We are sitting 7 feet from Cookie. It's in the lounge.
Uh-huh.
It's this size.
Yeah.
I give him $100. Cookie Jar's like, you know, doing his thing. And then, ain't no particular time. He's got that different. Guy would change wigs each performer.
Yep.
So Voss comes back 5 minutes later. Give me another $100. I have a system. I give him another $100. And I had just gotten paid, and I asked for cash, some cash. So I had a lot of dough on me.
Yeah.
So I give Voss $1,000. Like fucking, just I don't give a shit. Like I just want to see how far this goes. As Rich Voss is taking the money, Cookie Jar is right there. He goes, if you don't know me by handcuff him to the chair, he's got a fucking sickness. You'll never have a need.
That was his thing. He'd be in the middle of a heartfelt ballad, and he'd pepper in some fucking dead-on crowd work. And all that, I mean, I think...
handcuff him to the chair, he's got a fucking sickness.
That's fucking great.
You'll never have a...
I got a system.
Oh, my God. We get in the cab and go Continental, and the cab driver goes, airlines or hotel? And Voss goes, do you see any fucking luggage, dummy? Just fucking. But then you come up with those guys.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you had this experience, but then you go out into the real world and you continue to act that way.
Yeah.
Not such a good fit.
No.
You go on a set, you're like, hey, nice pants. Would you fucking blow your blah, blah, blah? And people are like,
oh, no, I play golf with him, and he does that. Yeah, they'll pair us up with somebody else, and he'll go in hard on them. And it's either a friend for life or complete shutdown.
Well, I would just continue that. And then when you have success and you still do the dozens in your day-to-day life, it doesn't go over very well.
No.
I think about how I am envious and in my less than days jealous of guys that are like, selling out. Like if they walked into a room and started shitting on me, I'd want to murder them.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, my whole, there's 20 years of my life now that makes sense with how people felt about me.
How did people feel about you?
I don't know. You have to ask them. Now?
Yeah.
don't know.
I think people have a lot of respect for you.
I think now I've kind of... There's no more chase in me.
Yeah.
You know, when you stand in line for medication at 50, yeah, with no drawstring in your pants and no laces in your shoes.
Yeah.
It's kind of humbling.
Yeah.
And then, I was out of show business, Greggy. Like,
yeah.
You look at my IMDb page and there's like a huge, it's like Keanu Reeves, Forrest Whitaker, Al Pacino. Then there's like a gap, big gap. And then there's like a talking dog movie. And I'm not a lead dog.
Yeah, you're in the pack.
I'm the salesman at Chewy Vuitton. I work at Bark Williams. And then there's another huge gap. And it's, you know.
Yeah.
I was unhirable.
Yeah.
Because it, you know.
I remember when
I'm a drug addict, Greg.
Well, I remember when you were spinning out, hanging out with you a couple times at the clubs. And, yeah, you were manic. And I didn't know it was drug fueled. I thought that you were just having manic episodes.
No.
Was it both or was it drugs?
Well, I mean, if one makes the other, right?
Right.
And one made depression really bad. So I would go to a psychiatrist and be prescribed four different medications for bipolar disorder and manic depression.
Yeah.
And then I go into a program and I work 12 steps and I realize, oh, my biggest mental illness is alcoholism.
Uh-huh.
And then you just slowly get off the medications. And
right.
Which is fucking bananas.
So they were prescribing all these bipolar medications without looking
into...
Well,
I was snorting Adderall in the guy's bathroom.
Yeah.
And then coming in like...
Yeah.
She's like, I think this guy's having a... He probably thought the same thing you did.
Right, right.
But you try to get off like an antidepressant.
Yeah.
It's like 6 weeks.
6 weeks, dude. It took me a year to get off one.
I quit cocaine in an afternoon.
Yeah.
But the shit you prescribe... You take two pills, take one of them, break it in half, do that for 3 weeks. Then we're going to go, how do you feel?
Yeah.
You okay?
Yeah.
It's like, Jesus.
No, it changes the way your brain works. I took one for 10 years, and it took me literally a year of shaving a piece off every day.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if I did more than that, I went dark, you know?
Really?
And the truth is, like, you know, nobody ever said to me when they started prescribing this stuff, are you exercising? Are you meditating? What's your diet like? Do you got a lot of bad carbs in your diet?
How's your morning routine?
Right. You know, how's your friendships?
So, yeah. So I replace, like, every morning now, I've kicked the shit out of the day by 9 a.m.
Yeah.
Like, we were just talking about late spots. Like, you said a 10:40 spot. Yeah. I'm like, I said, bro, I'm getting up to piss at 10:40.
Yeah.
Like, I'm literally waking up to take my first pee of the night
at
10:40.
Yeah.
I can't do it. 8 o'clock, I'm like, I'm not on.
Yeah.
When's Big Brother coming on? That's all I do. I love Big Brother.
And then you're up at what, like 6?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, on weekdays, me and my 13-year-old go to the gym. We're at the gym at 6 because he wants to lift before 7th grade.
Get out of here.
Bro, it's the fucking best.
Damn.
I'm stunned that he hasn't quit. We started in May.
Uh-huh.
And he's like... You got to get me up earlier. I want to walk to the gym when it's like dark. I'm like, let's do it, which is great. But at the same time, it's like, Jesus Christ, like, yeah. Now I got to get up.
Yeah.
Which means I got to go to bed at 9.
Yeah. And then how long do you work out for?
40 minutes because he's got his whole route. He's got to get home, shower, have breakfast, get his books ready.
Right.
So we're out the door at 7:40.
No cardio, just weights?
No, warm up a little bit. Yeah. I was doing cardio and then I transitioned to just weights.
Yeah.
Because I was fat, you know, I couldn't, I'm like, I'm not going to run. I hate running so much. So I do the elliptical. I do a bit about it.
Uh-huh.
Where it's like, I'm on the elliptical and in my mind, I'm like a UFC fighter cutting weight for a fight. And I'm just, I'm listening to AC/DC, like I'm rolling thunder and I'm powering rain. But if you look at me, just.
Yeah. I mean, that's a secret to life. That's a secret to life, man. What is it? What is it? Dance.
Let's do the whole place.
Dance like nobody's watching. Like you just, when you don't give a fuck that you look like that guy.
Oh, I don't care. I dressed up to come here.
Yeah. All right. So I want to ask you about,
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your wife now, do you want to talk about your wife now?
Sure.
Okay. So Jeannie is somebody who I think a lot of people are familiar with from the miniseries that she was in. What was that called? Dynasty or?
Winning Time.
Winning Time.
Yeah.
Great fucking series. Yeah. And how did she feel about the depiction of her in the series?
I mean, she'd have to answer for herself, you know,
yeah.
I will ask you to imagine there's a TV show about the Fitzsimmons family and nobody asked you for any input whatsoever.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then you sit on your couch and they're like, oh, they fucking nailed that.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
It's like an out-of-body experience.
Wow.
But my friend Jim Hecht is one of the producers, and he invited us. He goes, I know this is a no, but we recreated her childhood home. If you guys want to come to set on the weekend and just check it out. Uh-huh. I'm like, yeah, probably a no, but I'll ask. And she was like, yes. And she said, like, to the tile, they nailed it.
No shit.
Yeah, like, she was kind of freaked out. Like, at the bottom, she goes, you have no idea how many days I stood right here at the bottom of these stairs waiting for my dad to come down.
Wow.
Yeah, it was creepy.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And... you know, they did that. I wrote on Crashing, and they recreated the Boston Comedy Club. Did you hear about this? Mm. I'm telling you, Jay, it's on a soundstage, and you walk in, and the steps, you know, when you walk in the door, you go up.
Yeah.
Exact three steps, same fucking headshot. They had photos. They had a million photos of the Boston Comedy Club. The stage, the height of the stage, the backdrop, the headshots.
They nailed it.
Crazy what they can do.
You know, set designers are insane.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at, like, Jerry Maguire, the firing scene with all that. That was a soundstage.
Yeah. Oh, really? And yeah. It had an upstairs.
Yeah. It was just this giant ass office.
Yeah.
And the phones, some of the phones actually worked. I had business cards. I wish I still had it.
Oh, like Bob Sugar.
With the name of the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she wasn't unhappy with the depiction. Well, she'll have to speak for herself, but that is a weird. Did you guys sit and watch the show every week as it came out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was happy with some. Really happy with some aspects of it that I'll tell you off mic and other ones. It's I think there's a sense of, like, finally people know what I'm fucking dealing with here. You know what I mean?
Well, you're dealing with somebody that is obviously very driven, and according to the show, a lot of that drive was coming from not the healthiest place because
is it about her dad?
Yeah.
Oh no, I wasn't talking about him. But yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, she was, look, man, when I speak at a meeting, I'll say it sometimes, and it's true-ish. My wife's been with me 7 years. I've been with her three.
Okay.
You know, like I was just a maniac, you know.
So she was.
She stuck with me and you know, she was at my intervention. I thought she did the intervention.
Uh-huh.
So when I packed for rehab, I just angry packed, and I never took my eyes off her, like, ugh. And then when I got to rehab, I just had 14 pairs of socks. I had to call her and go, could you bring me pants? How you doing? What are you doing right now? You want to drive down to San Clemente and maybe bring me a shirt? What's that? Oh, yeah, shoes. Just, how do you pack for rehab?
Yeah. Right.
Like, and we're going to leave right now.
Yeah.
All right.
Wow.
Like, what do you bring?
Right.
Bro, you want to laugh? The greatest laughter I've ever had in my life was those 30 days in that first rehab.
Yeah.
Because I did two back to back. So I did the one, and then there was a Zoom call with, like, Frosty and Chappie.
Yeah.
And the guys that were at my intervention.
What's the first thing on my script?
Chappie.
Yeah.
Love him.
Love Kevin
and
Chapman.
I thought they were going to argue over, like, who got to come pick me up. Uh-huh. And instead, they
Chappie held up a brochure to another rehab. Like, no, no, no. I got a guy coming to get you. He's going to take you to this other place up north. JJ, the bus broke down, but they didn't fix the bus. They just kept an eye on it. This next place is going to fix the bus. I was like, bro. Oh. So then I went to the... But like that first... it was like all Mexican gangbangers and me.
Wow.
And I remember playing Scattergories, and one of the topics was name a celebrity whose name starts with R, and this big gangbanger goes, Queen Latifah. I got Queen Latifah. Hand to God. I said, you're a fucking ape. And he goes, what the fuck did you say to me? I go, I said, you are an ape. Como el gorila. It was on.
Yeah.
But those are your guys. Like, the guys you get sober with are like...
Kevin Chapman is the guy that I first met him because he had a club in Boston. It was a sober
Footprints.
Club. Footprints, yeah, down in Quincy. And he used to bring the comics down there. And because of his personality, he was doing stand-up, and he got to know everybody, Sweeney and Gavin and everybody, Jackie Flynn and Kevin Flynn. And we would all go down to Quincy, and we would do the sober club. And people were like, I don't know, a bunch of sober people? Because, like, the misconception is that they're, you know, straight-laced and boring. And, no, they have the same energy they had when they were drinking, but now they're not dull.
Yeah,
now they're sharp.
And
they're
they were younger
up.
Than I thought they'd be.
And they were the best crowds.
Yeah.
And Chappie was such a character. Oh, he still
Chappie
is a guy.
We
just
me,
haven't seen him in a while.
He came with me to buy my first car at Galpin Ford.
Uh-huh.
And it was like 11 p.m. on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
And this guy, Terry, this towhead blonde guy is sitting there, and he goes, that's the best I can do. He doesn't know that Chappie used to sell cars.
He did, right.
And Chappie, this is what Chappie said. Terry, it's a little warm for a ski mask. Why are you robbing him, Terry? You're forgetting about the rebate you're going to get when you tax this pot and you switch that over to your IOC. And the guy goes, let me go in the back, talk to my manager. And he goes, Terry, there's nobody back there. It's 11 o'clock on a Wednesday. He's at home with his kids. Terry, why are you robbing him? Why are you wearing a ski mask, Terry? So it's 6 months. So I got it for sticker price. And then 6 months later, I called up and I go, hey, I asked for the guy, Terry. And I go, do I get free oil changes? And he goes, are you going to bring that guy Chucky Chippy with you? I go, Chappie? He goes, yeah. I go, no, he's in Boston. He goes, you keep him out of here. I'll give you free oil changes for as long as you want.
He put me in touch with a guy that he used to work with to buy a car. I bought a Volkswagen Passat from this dude. And this guy was like, you know, real fast talking, red hair, slick back, and, you know, the horrible fucking suit. All polyester, real like Filene's basement suit. And he's like, you know, gives me this deal, and he's Chappie's guy. And so, and I didn't know what the fuck I was paying. I should have brought Chappie with me, but I trusted the guy. So anyway, the guy was doing a lot, and he'd come to my shows after that. And he was always, you know, fucking clearly doing blow. And then about 6 months later, he calls me, and he had gotten sober, and he gave me $3,000 back.
Oh, financial
That's
amends.
That's how hard he had taken me.
Financial amends?
Yeah, yeah.
That's nice. When I made amends to Barry Katz, you'll love this more than anybody. We meet in Malibu at this restaurant at night, and I go, you know, because of my addiction, I did this, this, and this, and this. I just want you to know I don't live like that anymore. If I left anything out, I hope you'll tell me. And mostly, Barry, I hope you tell me how I can make it up to you. He goes, did you bring a checkbook? No. I'll think of something, man. Did you bring a checkbook?
That's amazing. Oh,
what a fucking
character.
Schnorr.
Dude, who can make a fucking movie about Barry Katz?
Undeniable.
I knew Barry Katz when he was working in a basement in Alston. It was a one-bedroom apartment with Nina, who was his assistant, but really she was doing all the booking. And he walked around in his socks. He's 6 foot six.
It was
six.
His house.
It was, oh, did he live there?
That's where he lived.
And he was booking like a good 22 rooms around New England. And they were like, they're mostly hell gigs. Some of them were great. And, but you know, paying everybody cash out of, you'd show up at the office and you'd get paid.
Can you bring Don Gavin to the Tipperary pub? He's there the week after you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was $900.
Yeah.
That loop.
It's a headline for the
Monday
week.
To Sunday was $900.
Yeah.
It was $1 million.
Yep.
To get a $900 check at 19 years old, it was $1 million.
Yep.
How do you have a grudge against a guy that did that for you?
Oh, yeah.
I love him so much.
Yeah. No, he would. And the thing is, he would always make you bring the headliner because they all lost their licenses. They were all drunks. And so you'd have to drive and pick up Mike Donovan in Brookline.
But you're going to have to leave now.
You're going to have to
leave. He lives in
now.
New Hampshire.
Well, you know the famous story about him, right? I'll do it. No, you do it because you got a better impersonation.
Hey, Papa. Hey, Greg, are you sitting down? I have a gig for you. It's in Weymouth, Massachusetts. If you want it, you have to leave now. You have to pick up Steve Sweeney at his grandmother's house in Warwick, Rhode Island. It pays $1,000. Do you want it?
Yeah, I'll do it.
Oh, man, it's canceled. I got an addendum to that. Hey, Greg, it's Barry. Are you sitting down, man?
Yeah.
You're not going to believe this. So the country China, they want to do stand-up on the Great Wall of China. It's going to be covered by CNN, and out of thousands of comedians, they chose you. They want you to do stand-up comedy in communist China on the Great Wall of China on New Year's Eve. It's going to be covered by every major network. You're going to be Times Man of the Year. It pays $500,000. Do you want the gig?
Yeah.
Oh, it's fantastic. Do you know how to fly a Learjet?
No.
You've never flown a Learjet?
No.
I'll tell him. Okay, I'll tell him.
If people could only know how spot on that impression is. I will beg of you, go listen to State of the Industry. The Barry Katz. Just listen to 5 minutes just to hear his voice.
I love him. And he looks exactly like Dirk Nowitzki, if you're wondering.
Yes, he does.
It's not what you would think a talent manager of that fame.
Yeah. Yeah. He always sees me and he goes, "You're one of the good ones."
You deal in the light, man. There's some of these guys, man.
Yeah.
That's why I don't like the comedy store. It's just too much darkness. How's your wife and kids?
Good, really good. Yeah, my wife is, she started a new career about 5 years ago where she's a doula, postnatal doula. So once they have the baby, she helps them with the breastfeeding and the sleeping and coaching them on the early days.
That's great.
She loves it.
Breastfeeding's been coming up on my algorithm on Instagram. I'm not complaining.
Dude, I'm kind of into those. Yeah.
Now,
But they're fake babies.
No, I was just going to say, the whoas, they've figured out, the Instagram chicks have figured out how to get around this censorship.
Yeah.
They just have a doll and they whip out their boob and go like this.
Because you can't have nudity on the internet unless it's like medical.
It's your breastfeeding
medical doll.
Yeah.
So they get these dolls and they put a little bit of drop of milk on it. So when they pull the baby's face off, you get a nice drip. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice. And then JoJo, who you know should have been here, she fucking flaked out. We got to talk to her. She usually comes in and interns here. Yeah, she's doing good.
Good kid. You got good kids. I remember going to your house to do your podcast.
Yeah.
And it was just like being at my, your wife's just like, "You staying for dinner? What are you doing?" Like the kids just, your kids are, they were like my kids. We're doing something right. Just their social IQs are up the charts.
Yes.
Like, they were in high school, and they're like, "Hey, how you doing?"
Yeah.
Like, oh. Like, we went bowling, and my friend was visiting from Japan. He teaches English in Japan, and he brought his 18-year-old Japanese daughter. And they just got off the plane. There's, like, 10 of us at this bowling alley. And after, like, 10 minutes catching up, my son, he was 12 at the time, goes, "I don't think I introduced myself. I'm Mackie. I'm Jay's son." And I was like, what am I worried about his grades for?
Right.
That's who's going to sell Learjets.
Yep.
Who cares if he gets C's?
No, that's 100%. I feel like that about my kids is they're they feel like they're invited to the party.
Well, they are.
They're comfortable in their own skin. They
belong.
You're
that kind of guy. Like, I'm that kind of guy too. Like, here's our table. It's going well. Who's coming with us?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I think it's how we were raised. I mean, I was raised by two parents that were both I think they cared about people's experience. And I think that might have made me a comedian as well. I cared that people were having a good time, that they were laughing. If things were, I mean, this was, it was a little too much pressure on this, but if things were boring, I had to fix them. And that was adult child stuff, yeah. You know, that I was dealing with. My dad was an alcoholic, but.
Yeah. That's. Like, that's just leaving me now. And that's why it's the worst when you invite friends to a show.
Yeah.
Because in the moment when you invite them, you really mean it.
Yeah.
I'm doing a show. You should come. Mm-hmm. Oh, great. They're coming. And then you get to the show and you're like, then they're like texting you, where's the bathroom?
Yeah.
You're like, this fucking guy.
No, I got a rule. No friends at shows. People ask me, hey, I'd love to come out and see you. Not in LA, not New York. If you're in Boise, Idaho, and I'm playing, great. Love to see you.
Huh.
I'll put you on the guest list. Not LA or New York. When I'm in LA, I want to be in the back hallway fucking around with Craig Robinson and Fahim Anwar and whoever. You know, I'm at work.
You don't want to turn to your friend every fifth sentence and go, see that Rich Wallace is a guy we know.
Right.
Yeah. My thing is, it's that I want everybody to have a good time. Like, that's my role. Also, like, every pause in a conversation, I have to do something.
Hmm.
I think that's ACA shit.
I notice it with when people do get sober and they're really, you know, working it. Suddenly they're silent at times. They can let silence happen.
You and I stared at each other so long a little earlier, I thought there was a glitch.
No, that's what I mean. I felt it from you earlier.
You know, like, oh, thanks. You know, like on the internet, they're like, watch this person glitch out.
Yeah.
And like you and I, there was just a pause and we just stared at each other. I'm like, wow, this is a long time. And then you finally said something.
I love a silence.
I do too.
Yeah.
I love at a meeting when they're like, all right, anybody want to share? Raise your hand. And nobody raises their hand. It's like breaking the sound barrier. People just can't take it. They're like, oh, hi, I'm Mark. I'm an alcoholic. It's like, fucking sell out.
We had a real moment going there for a second.
Yeah, just look around the room.
Well, also if you know, I've got it with my wife. I mean, Jesus Christ.
That took a while, the being able to just be quiet?
Just be quiet. And I remember my father said that about my mother. He's like, I knew that we were meant for each other when we could be alone in a room and quiet.
Yeah.
You know?
So the first time I did this, walked another guy through the steps. Like, I had been taken through them. Now I got to return the favor, right?
Yeah. What is that, the 12th step?
The 12th, yeah. Yeah. And that's when I realized, because I wanted, this guy was sharing things with me that were heinous, like felonies, got to get all the secrets out. His hands were shaking, holding this notebook. And like, whatever you're thinking of that he, nothing's off the table. It was vile. And I wanted to like jump off the couch and go, just so you know, you're doing great.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, but I, listening at this, I was 51, 54 now, was an entirely new skill set.
Mm-hmm.
Like actually being a person sitting present, not thinking of what I'm saying next, because then you're not listening. I didn't know how to do it so much. I did an impression of my sponsor listening to me.
Uh-huh.
I went like this, and he's like a big Texan, and I just kept going. Turns out that's listening.
Yeah, right.
Turns out that's listening.
And that's what draws people out.
Yeah.
Because if you guide them, now they're saying what you're coaching them to say.
Wouldn't you be, if you were like an attorney, oh, shooting fish in a barrel.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I had a guy at my house doing a fourth and fifth step. And when he was done with all his resentments, I go, you know, the two questions afterwards, I go, you ever been molested? No. Any gay stuff? No. I go, okay. Any secrets? Like, now's the time, man. And I saw him go, that just something metaphysical, the 33 minutes. We sat in silence for 33. I knew we had something. And then finally it got out.
Really?
And he just starts fucking crying.
Wow.
Like, I've never told anybody this.
Do you think it was like a repressed memory or he just never talked about it?
No, I'm going to go, I'm never telling anybody this.
Right.
And he just had somebody sit across from him that he felt safe with go, And I think that's...
But let me ask you one thing.
Yeah.
Is it like when you're talking to a shrink where there's... If they tell you about a felony, is there a certain point you have to report them?
No.
Like if somebody said, I raped a girl, you just listen. No. Wow. That's powerful.
Yeah. Like my sponsor knows my most vile shit.
Yeah.
And I did the steps twice my first year. I like the effect produced by it so much. I just got back in line.
Yeah.
Like drugs.
Yeah. Right.
But then the second time I'm like, oh, I left some shit. I left some nooks and crannies, you know, and these two guys just, the most beautiful thing I've experienced was men in my life, older men made time for me.
Uh-huh.
They were never put out. They sat, I mean, a fourth step, fifth step, it can take a couple days. Like, I got a guy, it took like 3 days.
Which ones are those?
All my resentments, what's my part in it?
Mm-hmm.
And my part in it is always, I'm selfish, I'm only thinking of me, I kept secrets, I'm petty, I want different rules for you than apply to me. And I'm my expectations aren't met, and I'm pissed. I didn't get my way.
Yeah.
Wah.
Yeah.
It's just all that little kid, child of an alcoholic, in the crib crying until somebody fucking hands him something.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, there's no tricky curves, right?
But is what's underneath that you don't feel that your needs are going to be met?
Oh, yeah. It's all a fear of being left alone. And then so it's the fourth step is I'm resentful towards blank. So that's column one. Column two is for doing X. And then the third column is, this affects my pride, self-esteem, ego, personal relations, sexual relations, ambition, financial security, and feeling of safety. Okay. So whichever one applies, you tick that off.
Right.
Fourth column, what's my part in it?
Right.
So like if you were molested as a kid, my only part in it is I'm still holding on to it.
Right.
But usually it's like, well, I've done something in the past to step on that toe where it comes back karmically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's and then what's the underlying fear? Going back to your question, what's the underlying fear with all of these defects of character that I have? And it's always I'm afraid I'm going to be left alone.
And the first step, which is
admitting I'm powerless,
right?
And my life has become unmanageable,
right? And that part you have to keep coming back to, I guess, right?
I mean, yeah, every morning.
And then the higher power is step two?
Step two is I'm willing to accept the fact that maybe somebody else could run my life better than me.
Right.
Step three is committing to that. Step three, prayers.
Right.
A daily thing.
So is that then fill you up with a sense that if there is a higher power, that you don't have to be afraid that you're going to be abandoned and left alone and not provided for and financial and all that stuff?
I don't think it ever goes away, Greggy. I think you just get a relief from it for longer and longer periods of time. Like when I got married, that was a big weight. Like, okay, I mean, I married pretty well.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, I do. Wow. She's not going to leave me.
Yeah.
Like we're married.
Right.
So I think I was kind of like the woman.
Uh-huh.
Like, when are we going to get married? 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 You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But we have separate, it's, if life was fair, I would not be with her. I gave her every reason to leave me.
Yeah.
Oh,
what do you think made her stay with you?
She saw something in me worth hanging around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a bad neighborhood. There's a fucking... a toy store with a broken window and there's guys in there smoking cigarettes and rolling, but way in the back. Like, that's a nice bike, flat tires,
yeah,
and no handlebars. Like, no, well, that's, whose bike is that?
Uh-huh.
I don't know, it's a weird analogy, but we were supposed to be together, and obviously you and your wife were supposed to be together.
Yeah.
You guys cohabitate well. Like, I was like, oh, this is how you do it.
Yeah.
And that was 10 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's 25 years this summer, and I realize, like, when people talk about how much work marriage is, I feel so lucky. I'm like, it's really not.
No.
If you can find the right person, it's like...
You got to know when to leave each other the fuck alone.
Exactly. That's what it is.
We have three dogs, right?
Yeah.
One is her baby, like the Maltese. It's one, and it's hers. So we have this routine. Like, we watch TV, and then we take the dogs out, and her dog won't take a shit, so she's got to take it out by herself because she knows where it likes to go, and the dog kind of leads her around. So I'm like, I'll go with you. And just something was off in that walk. And about, 8 minutes in, I go, if this energy's weird, I'm, you know what? I just went back upstairs. Like, it was weird. Like, that's their thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah. Like, and I never had a woman that liked me.
Yeah.
Like, that truly was attracted to me all the time, admired me and liked me. Bro, fuck
it. And she liked the bad you.
She put up with the bad me.
Really like the new you.
Yeah. Bro, I had sex twice in a day last week. I haven't done that since my 20s.
Yeah.
Because I'm an old fucking man.
Oh, yeah. I got the shot clock. 24-hour shot clock.
That's it. Yeah. And like, we just had sex 4 weeks ago. What do you... Leave me alone. Like, we just did it last month.
Yeah.
All right. And you know what it took the second time? I mean, I'm talking like 4 hours apart, which is incredible. I'm 54 fucking years old.
Right.
I did so many drugs. It shouldn't even work, but it works. You know what it took the second time for me to get bonered up?
Right.
We're laying on the bed, not in the bed, fully clothed on top of the bed, watching Big Brother. And she just looks over and goes, "You're so handsome." I'm like, "Oh, let's go." Finished before the nominations.
I love it.
Got it done before the noms. And I said that out loud when
That's
I came.
Great. Yeah.
Finish before the noms.
Yeah, because that second one can take a minute.
No, it was great.
All right, we're going to do a thing called Fastballs with Fitz. Do you need some water? Here, take some of my water.
No, mine's full. I only spilled half.
Oh, okay, good.
You noticed that glitch, that moment?
Yeah.
That was great. You're the best.
Well, I don't call it a glitch.
No. In my mind, I'm like, oh, this is like on the internet when they go, these two guys glitched.
Yeah. No, I mean, we're brothers. We started together.
I love you, buddy.
I love you too,
man. This is great.
Yeah, I was so excited you were coming. And it was so easy. I texted you 30 seconds later.
Amen.
When and where.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're my guy, dude.
Yeah.
As John DiMaggio would say.
And what would Joe DiMaggio say?
He's dead.
All right. He used to do the Money Store. Remember?
No, I was still with Zudo.
Oh.
Joe DiMaggio did Mr. Coffee. Let me get a fastball. What do we got?
Right. Okay. Who is your best Asian friend?
Ever?
Yeah.
Oof. Like, Bobby Lee never counts, right?
Because
he's tough to pet.
Yeah.
He's really hard. He's tough to pet.
I know.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Why am I chasing this guy around?
We all want to be closer to Bobby Lee.
And Theo, too.
Yeah.
Tough to pet?
Yep.
So they probably really like you, and I want to... All right. My closest Asian friend ever. Wow. That's not a fastball. That's a fucking knee-buckling curveball.
Yeah. I thought of it this morning.
That's a Hideki Matsui screwball. I don't think I've ever had a close Asian friend.
Interesting.
Right now, there's an Asian guy going, "What the fuck?"
What's he saying?
What the fuck? Oh, motherfuck you!
Jay, no more!
So, hold on. I got an answer for this. No, I don't know. I think I've ever had an Asian friend.
Okay.
Who's yours?
I don't think I have one either. I like Bobby Lee is awesome. Bobby Lee is also the guy I'd like to be friends with. If you were to be trans, would you rather be a woman who was born a man or a man who was born a woman?
Would I rather transition to being like me now, becoming a woman?
No, just in more of a supposition.
I think
world.
I'd rather be a guy becoming a woman because then I could still fight and protect myself.
Interesting.
If I'm a woman becoming a man and somebody rolls up on me, I'm still that 106-pound chick from the roller derby.
Right. I see that, but I feel like the man who became a woman is going to attract more conflict.
And cock.
Ever won any awards?
People's Choice Award.
Did you really?
Yeah.
No shit.
For Gary Unmarried.
But wow. Yeah. That's pretty cool. Because that's the people.
I won a recovery award, which was just, you know, rock to recovery. Like, we can get this guy at our function. We'll give him an award, I think. I was honored to have it.
Yeah, right.
But I was like, sure.
Were you at the People's Choice Awards to receive it?
Yeah, and Carrie Ann and Abba from Dancing with the Stars went up to the podium, looks out at me and goes, the nominee, I'm like, Jesus Christ, where'd you learn to fucking hustle?
Who did you thank in your speech? Barry?
Undeniable, man. Yeah. I don't remember.
Yeah.
My wife just saved the marriage this way.
Yeah. Who do you want to give your eulogy?
Wow. Jeff Ross.
Nice. Good call. Yeah, he knows. Because the thing about Jeff is great roaster, but also...
Or T.D. Jakes.
Who's that?
The preacher. Big black preacher.
So I don't know this motherfucker, but...
Come on! Can I get a name? What about Jeff? He's got a big heart.
He's got a big heart.
He's a beautiful guy.
He's a Jewish mensch, you know? Yeah. Got to think about it. I think I married a Jew. I love the Jews because they're very emotive. They're fucking direct and honest.
And he's a Jersey Jew, so he's got a double, Jersey. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Have you ever borrowed a lot of money?
I'm still thinking about fucking Asians.
I know.
How do I not have any Asian friends?
There was a kid.
They are tough to pet.
They are tough to
pet. Ever have an Asian neighbor? You never turn around in your street using that driveway, do you?
No, you don't.
There's a fucking force field
somewhere.
That's
right. That's right.
Isn't that weird? Never, of all the times you've ever done this, like, I'll use that driveway to make a U-turn. Asian driveway. No.
Because the landscaping is so precise, you're afraid that you
would...
I had
this conversation last night. We have so many Asian neighbors. I'm like, our property values.
Oh. Yeah.
If I can get gay Asian neighbors?
Yeah, right. Well, what do they say? The artists, if it's a bad neighborhood, the artists come in first, then the gays come in, then the Jews come in, then the Asians come in.
Not my neighborhood. Playa Vista is just Asian and Russian.
Really?
Yeah. It's like the embassy fell or something.
Have you ever borrowed?
Are we recording now?
Have you ever borrowed a lot of money or lent a lot of money?
I've always lent money, just given it away. Like when I was up and running,
yeah,
I would give out like 10 grand, like it was lunch.
No shit.
Like somebody had a baby.
Yeah.
Just.
With no expectations of it being returned.
You know.
Yeah.
You can't give a sizable thing like that. It's like. But that was like my big shot ism.
Yeah.
That's the ism. Like me.
You ever give any to Rich Voss?
Yeah, that day, that night. You know what, Rich? You fuck. You probably owe me a grand from the fucking Continental and cookie jar. I never thought about that. I used to take. No, I never really borrowed money. I always had the hustle.
Yeah.
When I was high and needed money for drugs, I went online as a life coach.
No shit.
I was great at it.
Wow.
As you would be too.
Oh, yeah.
And I had a simple formula. I feel blank because blank.
Blank.
First blank, use a one word emotion only. Second one, you can write as much as you want.
Yeah.
The first one is always a veil over I'm afraid or angry.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one, they're just sending fucking postcards.
Yeah.
They know it's like they just, you're like, oh, okay.
So you just throw them that up top. All of a sudden, it's 50 minutes. Wrap it up.
Yeah. And I had like packages or we could Zoom.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't borrow money, but I always found ways to make money.
Yeah.
But then then the IRS put a lien on my house, so I wasn't very good at it.
Oh, shit.
When I lived in the Palisades, I sold a $4 million house. I made $7,000.
Why?
Because I was that much in debt with taxes and stuff.
Oh, that's to be cleared after all the liens on the house.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I remember when I got to zero. I was so in debt. I remember telling everybody, I'm at zero. I have $0. And everybody's like, oh, that's terrible. I'm like, no. I'm coming from the other way.
Yeah.
I was like thrilled. I was at zero.
Right. You're above water. Have you ever not finished a set on stage?
Oh, yeah. Only getting heckled. There's like, there's no reason for this to keep going. Mm-hmm. Just maybe twice. Like, what the fuck am I doing here?
Yeah.
Mic in the mic stand, bounce.
Right, right.
How about you?
I got beat up on stage one night, so that didn't finish. And then one
Jesus, go yeah. ahead, look, tell me the story.
I was at Stitches. Remember
Beacon
Stitches?
Street. Yeah, I loved yeah. it.
And they had a Jewish comedy night. And it was like, perfect, you know, like you. Young Jewish, like college students. It was like, this is before, you know, social dating apps.
They all come
apps.
In from Brandeis. And
Brandeis and Harvard and BU and Northeastern. All like and this. They'd all come in. No, no, they weren't like that. No, they were. These were Long Island, Jersey Jews.
Yeah, yeah.
And they come in and they're going to meet. And so this guy, this kid shows up. Not a kid. He's in his 20s, probably 30. And he's a cab driver from Israel, and his name is Simpka. And I'll always remember that because that was the name of the village idiot in that Woody Allen movie, Love and Death. And so I said that to him. As he's heckling me, I tell him that, and I'm destroying him. Because he showed up to meet a Jewish girl, but they don't want to meet a cab driver. They want to meet a pre-med guy from Harvard. So he's getting no love, and he's taking it out on me. So I'm annihilating him. And then he goes, nothing more. And then I said, all right, let me know when your friends get here, because he was alone. Comes up on stage, fist clenched. I take the microphone, and it's one of these Game of Thrones old school, you know, the steel mesh head.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just crack him in the forehead, and he's bleeding. And then he does some Krav Maga Israeli shit, and he gets me in a headlock. He's spinning me around, and my legs are kicking around, and the bouncers finally get up there, and they drag him off. And then the Harry Conforti, who is the club owner, says to me, after they reset the tables, he goes, all right, Fitzsimmons, you got 5 more minutes. Sends me back up. I get a standing ovation because it's Boston. They'd rather see a fight than a comedy show. And
oh
so
my
they
God.
They finally calm down, and then I look out at the crowd and I go, all right, who's next?
How many heart attacks have you had on other people when you're on stage? Ever had a heart attack in the audience?
No.
I've had 2.
Really?
I was at, what's the place in Nashville?
Zany's?
Yeah. And a guy has a heart attack, and that's a small room. Like,
yeah.
You know, and they're taking him out on a stretcher. And he's like 4-point restraint. Like, he's got the straps across his arm. And as he goes past the stage, he goes, you were great. Just give me one of these. And I was in... I was in Denver 2 years ago. Actually, I wasn't on stage. The middle guy was on stage, but it was at my show, I guess. And, you know, Comedy Works, they have the balcony in the Greenwood Village room, the
yeah.
big room. And somebody has a heart attack up there. And they're like, is there a doctor in their house? And I had all these AA guys at my show from Denver. One of the guys was about to get his leg amputated. So he's in a wheelchair, and it's pinned straight out like this.
Yeah.
And this lady, fine woman, goes, I'm a doctor. Runs down the aisle and fucking trips over this guy's leg and eats shit. Now we need a second doctor for the doctor. It was fucking chaos,
and
dude.
You haven't even got on
no.
yet.
No. I'm like, Jesus Christ. But that, you know, Denver is the greatest town.
Yeah, it's the best.
Anything could happen. It could be the fucking Dust Bowl you go up there and kill.
Yeah, I was just there a couple weeks ago. It was amazing. You end up coming home with 10 minutes of new material.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you stay at that condo with the...
Yeah.
With the Pac-Man machine and
everything? Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah, it's great. It's the only condo in the country I'll stay at.
Same.
Yeah.
Bed's
although,
little...
now the Comedy Mothership has a condo.
Oh, yeah?
It's a penthouse, and it's got 2 bedrooms with a balcony looking out over all. It's like, it's
I've never
sick.
Been to Austin.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Just one of those weird... What's the town that's like, for some reason, you just never played it? Mine's Austin.
I never played Nashville. I went there for the first time last year just because I'd never been. I always wanted to go to the Ryman Auditorium and see a show. So I went, I saw Jason Isbell. And then have you heard of Wheeler Walker Jr.? He's this comic who plays a country music character, but he's really funny. But yeah, great city. I'd like to do stand up there, but they haven't had me.
I was doing Zany's Nashville, and then I had to do Knoxville, 3 hours away. Steve Gorman, drummer for the Black Crowes, was going to do my podcast. We finally connected in Nashville.
Really?
He picked me up and drove me. We recorded it on my laptop as he drove. With
really?
I'm sitting in the passenger seat with a mic.
No shit.
It was the best, and we're still friends.
Wow. Dude, I saw them for the first time this year. Cried. I cried.
I need a ram on me. I fucking love the book. But
Robinson.
No Steve Gorman, though.
Chris Robinson is one of the greatest frontmen in history. Still brings it 100%.
Yeah. Steve Gorman's, I love Chris. Yeah. I've always gotten, he's a good guy.
Yeah.
Steve Gorman's book, Hard to Handle, about the Crows.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Really?
Oh my God.
They went hard?
There's a reason he's not on this tour.
Yeah.
They were touring with Jimmy Page, and they did like the Tonight Show, and then they're in the day off, and then they're going to do Irvine Meadows with Jimmy Page. And mm-hmm. it's going to be the most money they ever made, because it's a small, you know, you're doing 1,500 seats.
Yeah.
So it's like 2 weeks in the United States, week off, 2 weeks in the United States, a week off, 2 weeks in Europe, week off, 2 weeks in Europe, week off. Everybody clears $2 million net.
Nice.
And it's like, wow. So they do the Tonight Show with Jimmy Page. Then it's like 9 a.m. and they're sitting by, Rich, the guitarist, is sitting by the pool with a bunch of strippers that he pulled, hasn't gone to bed yet, strumming his guitar. Jimmy Page comes out and goes, listen, I really like playing with you guys, you know, and I got 40 years of Led Zeppelin riffs I've never used. I'd like you guys to have them, and I'd like to produce your next album. And Rich Robinson's like, no, we're good, bro. Appreciate it, but, you know, we're the Crows. At 5 p.m. or 8 p.m. on the night off, that night, Steve Gorman gets a call from the manager and goes, we got a problem. Jimmy went home. And he goes, is it his back? He goes, no, England. He's home. So from that conversation, Jimmy Page got a Learjet and like
so offended that he didn't want to do his riffs.
Flew to England home, back to his Aleister Crowley castle.
Shit.
And he goes, which one was it? It's either Rich or Chris. Poof.
Wow, amazing. Final question. Jay Moore, what's the hackiest bit you've ever done?
Well, I got a lot of them. My first closer was I would rap as a cow.
No, you didn't.
And it goes a little something like this. I was in a restaurant and I saw on the menu beef medallions. I've seen a lot of cows in my life. I've never seen one wearing a medallion. What is this, a rapping cow? What is this, LL Cool Cow? Walking around with a big Mercedes medallion. My name is Bessie. I'm white with black spots. I sleep standing up, not in a cot. I wear a bell. You can all go to hell. Surrounded by manure, so of course I smell. Some people think a cow's mind is in the gutter. Well, all you humans can suck my udders. Good night, everybody. I love you.
Dude, you're the best. Thank you so much. I'm going to remember that. I asked that bit. That's always the final question. That is, without a doubt, the best one.
You're crying.
I've ever heard. I'm fucking crying.
Some people think a cow's mind is in the gutter.
Suck my udder.
Udder. And I remember Johnny Lampert going, you should go like udder. Like, I was taking notes on this bit. Like, oh, yeah, because there's, udders.
Dude, 1992, that crushed.
That's why you play a lot of colleges, Greg.
Yeah.
Doing that. Fuck. Stupid teenagers.
Jay Moore, if you want to see him live, he's one of the great stand-up comics that's out there today. Fucking crushes every time. Tacoma, Washington, October 4th and 5th. Mohegan Sun in Connecticut, October 17th through 19th. Uncle Vinny's in Point Pleasant, October 25th. So much fun.
BYOB.
Is it now?
What's more? It always has. What's more Italian than that? Guys with a fucking Galliano bottle on the table in front of from home.
Yeah.
That long Galliano stem.
Yeah. Oh yeah. City Winery in New York on October 26th, and then the Kravitz Center in Palm Beach, November 5th through 6th. Jay Moore, you're a pleasure.
Buddy.
Love you too, man.
Glad
thanks
we're
for
back
being
in touch,
here,
man.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. so you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.